Welcome to Students Incorporated, a podcast exploring the topics of business, education, technology, and design. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. Episodes include student conversations, interviews with thought leaders, and inspirational stories with an international flavor. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm Mr. Jason, and I'm joined by Yen Hao and our special guest for our first segment, Mr. Darrow. We are excited to ask Mr. Darrow some questions about space and the frontier beyond Earth. Then, for segment two, we'll continue with part four of The Secrets of El Dorado. But before we take a trip into space with Mr. Darrow, let's hear our quote of the day and get some headline news.
Our quote of the day comes from Kalpana Chawla. She said, "When you look at the stars in the galaxy, you feel that you are not just from any particular piece of land, but from the solar system." This quote suggests that gazing at the vastness of the stars and galaxy can evoke a sense of interconnectedness to a larger universe beyond just our immediate surroundings. It implies that our wonder and awe should extend beyond just our Earth, but to the heavens as well. By recognizing our place within the great big cosmos, we may feel a deeper connection to our Creator and all that He's made. And that's our quote of the day. Now onto some headline news.
Thank you, Yen Hao. Here's some headline space news from around the universe. Our first news piece comes from Mars. Unfortunately for enthusiasts of ancient Martian life, the amount of trapped water on Mars, a crucial indicator of its ability to support life, has been suggested to be less than it was originally supposed. New research at Utrecht University in the Netherlands has indicated that gullies on the Martian surface may have been caused by rapidly exploding dry ice instead of being carved out by the flow of water. During the Wirr, the large amounts of CO2 gas in Mars's atmosphere freezes and turns into ice, and when temperatures increase again, they revert back to their gaseous state. And the transformation is accompanied by large releases of energy in the form of an explosion. This new theory will likely be met with a lot of scrutiny, but it's still in a long list of other different theories. Next, let's see what's happening on the moon. As historical allies, China and Russia have decided to further their partnership by planning on building an automated nuclear reactor on the moon by 2035, which will provide power for the proposed lunar base that both countries have also decided to partner on building. Next, what's going on with SpaceX? An article from Space News on March 19th states that about SpaceX's recent third test launch of its heaviest vehicle, Starship. The article states, SpaceX hopes to conduct the next launch of its Starship vehicle as soon as early May, a schedule that depends on how quickly it can get amended launch license. Speaking at the Satellite 2024 conference, March 19th, Gwynne Shotwell, president and chief operating officer of SpaceX, said the company was still reviewing the data from the vehicle's third integrated launch, March 14th, but expected to be ready to fly again soon. "We're still going through the data from the flight," she said when asked about the analysis of data from the mission. "It was an incredibly successful flight. We hit exactly where we wanted to go. On that launch, both the Super Heavy booster and the Starship upper stage performed as expected on its ascent, placing the vehicle on its planned suborbital trajectory. Starship's payload door was opened while in space, and a propellant transfer demonstration, moving liquid oxygen between two tanks in the vehicle, was initiated. However, a planned relight of the Starship's Raptor engines while in space did not take place, which the company blamed on a roll induced in the vehicle. During re-entry, the vehicle broke apart at about 65 kilometers altitude. The Super Heavy booster also exploded during the final stages of its descent to the Gulf of Mexico during a planned landing burn." And finally, if you happen to live in Mexico or the southern or eastern parts of the United States, you're in for a treat on April 8th. You'll get to witness a total solar eclipse, which will last over 4 minutes long. The daytime darkness will affect 15 states within the United States, from Texas to Maine and all the states in between. And that ends our headline space news. We are back for our first segment of this episode, and we are joined by Mr. Darrow, along with co-host Yen Hao. We are here to have a discussion about space, that stuff that's beyond Earth. What's out there and how can we study it properly? We are hoping Mr. Darrow can help us set the record straight. Okay, Yen Hao, we'll start off with the first question.
Hi, and thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast. Could you introduce yourself and give us a brief overview of what you do?
Certainly. My name is Daryl Holst, and I teach high school science at ICS Bangkok. Among the subjects I teach is an astronomy course. I grew up in a place that had quite dark night skies, unlike Bangkok, and enjoyed looking up at the night sky. In university, I had the opportunity to work as an astronomy lab assistant and became a bit more familiar with observing the universe.
All right, that sounds like you've always had an interest in looking up to the stars. To begin, maybe we can go back in time a bit for some history about this subject. How did ancient civilizations use astronomy and the study of the stars and planets in their daily lives?
We have archaeological evidence that ancient civilizations kept track of the movements of the sun, moon, and stars. Think of Stonehenge or the Mayan pyramids, which are precisely aligned to show the cycle of the sun throughout the year. These cycles could help those people to know when to hold a festival or when it would be safe to set off on a sea voyage, when crops should be planted, or when eclipses might occur. It does not appear to be a coincidence that the heavens are useful in this way. According to the very first chapter of the first book of the Bible, God created the sun, moon, and stars to serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. Additionally, through observing the patterns in the heavens, these ancient peoples were able to observe that many events in the natural world are predictable.
It's interesting how all these ancient civilizations can come up with this kind of technology to track the time. But fast forward to 2024, what ways does studying astronomy and the universe benefit modern society and our understanding of the cosmos?
One thing it lets us know is the limits on our understanding. When we read astronomy news, we see that there are huge discoveries happening regularly. Sometimes we're tempted to think science has everything just about figured out, but looking at the basic questions that we're still answering, we find we're nowhere near having all the answers. Second thing is the awe-inspiring grandeur of seeing stars that are so big and have so much power that we cannot even wrap our minds around them. Think about how hot the sun can feel on a sunny day here on Earth. It's giving off an incredible amount of energy, and only the tiniest sliver is hitting the Earth. If we want to understand the size of the sun, it would take 100 Earth-sized planets side by side to make a line across the middle of the sun. If we compare the sun to the largest star that we've observed, it would take a line of more than 1,700 suns set side by side to make a line across from one side to the other of that star. Now, let's realize that the typical galaxy has 100 billion stars in it. That's billion with a B. And there's evidence that there are 2 trillion galaxies in the universe. Studying astronomy can lead us to an endless stream of saying, wow, over and over again.
Can you describe the process that an astronomer uses to observe and study the known universe? What does that look like and how do they do it?
Sure. The nearest stars are so far away from us that humans haven't even gotten close to traveling to them. So if we think what's available for us to study from these stars, the answer to that would be light. Scientists have found that we can pass starlight through a prism and separate it out into a rainbow of colors or a spectrum. We call this study spectroscopy. When scientists analyze one of these spectra, they find that most of the information they would like to know about the star is encoded into that star's spectrum of light. What elements the star is made of, how large it is, how much mass it has, how fast it's moving toward us or away from us, how fast it's rotating. This might make us ask, is it just a coincidence that the information we want to know is encoded into the starlight in a way that we can observe and understand it? I read a story of an astrophysicist who asked herself that question and decided, that just seems unbelievable to me. That led her to pursue and get to know the God that not only made the universe, but placed the information where we could find it.
Okay, some of those studies sound like what we're doing in AP Physics 2 right now, which is kind of interesting because that just shows how much like these different fields can overlap and contribute to the same thing. I'm right. curious, like, have there been any recent discoveries that the common person would not know about?
Yeah, perhaps. 1916, Einstein predicted that there would be gravitational waves, waves of energy that move through gravitational fields at the speed of light. It took us over 100 years, but scientists now have evidence that they have observed these gravitational waves. In preparation to answer these questions today, I reached out to an ICS alum from the class of 2022 who's studying astronomy in Scotland. He had mentioned that members of the university were involved in early research in gravitational waves. He mentioned that one type of these waves, the active gravitational waves, can be formed by black hole binaries, where there's two black holes orbiting around each other. These gravitational waves act as distance indicators and can allow us to measure the Hubble constant. Getting good results of this constant would allow us to determine the geometry of space-time itself. We've found different ways to measure the Hubble constant, but today different techniques give us two different values for it. As our technology has developed and our techniques have improved, scientists felt that our data would start to match up more and more closely, but so far what we've found is that we're not getting any closer at all to resolving this apparent conflict. This would suggest that there's possibly something wrong with our best model of the universe.
That's super interesting, especially with the whole idea of Hubble constant. I've never heard that before. While we are on this subject of things like common people probably don't know or have never thought about, here's my next question. Can you explain the concepts of dark matter? Is it a theory or is it actually true?
Yep. There's a range of views among scientists regarding dark matter. Dark matter is a form of matter that does not appear to interact with other observable matter. It appears we can't measure it by saying placing it on a scale, or we can't see it, we can't feel it. So we might ask, well, why would they suggest that it's there at all? Without dark matter, it seems there's not enough mass in galaxies to keep them from flying apart, given the speed at which they're rotating. Take a look at the Milky Way, and it looks like it should be torn apart. How much dark matter do we need to add to make the data fit? According to many models, 85% of all matter in the universe has to be dark matter. This isn't adding just a little bit of mass around the edges to top things up. This is most of the mass of the universe. Scientists who propose that there is no dark matter suggest maybe we have misunderstood something about how gravity works, and if we understood gravity better, there wouldn't be a need for this mysterious dark matter. If I could come back to your initial question for a moment, is it a theory or is it true? In science, a theory has a special meaning. A theory would be a well-established explanation of an aspect of the natural world supported by evidence from many different areas of science that all point to the same explanation. In scientific terms, a theory is quite reliable. But dark matter isn't a theory in the scientific sense. It's not that established. Now for the other question, is it true? That's a hard question for science to answer. Science tells us very little about things that are absolutely true and can never change. If we find new evidence that doesn't fit our current hypothesis or theories, we need to be ready to throw out the old ideas and look toward a new model or idea that better explains what we observe. So science might not be able to tell us if it's true.
So this topic sounds pretty controversial and also unusual. Speaking of the subject of unusual objects, what are some unusual or unexpected features or objects astronomers have discovered?
Well, I could think of a couple of examples here. One is our sun. Our sun is a bit unusual. It's estimated that 85% of stars are binary stars. That is, they have two stars rotating around each other. But when we look at even these remaining stars, which are not binaries, we find another feature that's exceptional about our sun. A 2020 study found that our sun is much less active and is more consistent in its energy output compared to other stars that are nearly identical to our sun. So we might ask, why does that matter? These features of the sun are necessary for life to be supported in our solar system. If the sun had wild fluctuations in energy output like other stars, the Earth would be roasted for a time, followed by a period where it freezes solid, and life wouldn't be able to survive. One other surprising example comes from an image produced in 2022 that scientists understand to show a very, very early time in the history of the universe. It showed many large and well-developed galaxies in a place where they did not expect any galaxies to form. We're always finding things that we don't expect, and this pushes us to learn more and come up with new models to explain what we observe.
Our next question has to do with us and people, our tendency to leave our debris and trash everywhere we go, including space. With the increase of space debris orbiting Earth, how does this problem affect current and future space missions? And we all know that Starlink is up there with many, many scores of satellites now giving internet to different continents. But this causes problems, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's a good question. There are around 8,000 tons of space debris orbiting the Earth right now. We have evidence that there are 130 million pieces that are smaller than 1 centimeter and maybe 34,000 pieces larger than 10 centimeters. NASA is currently tracking 23,000 objects 24 hours a day to see where they're at. What does it matter? Well, a newly launched satellite could be taken out by a piece of space debris that's in the wrong place at the wrong time. That would be a huge loss. Communication and GPS satellites could be lost, and then those services could be disrupted. But perhaps the most concerning is that missions involving human space travel could end in tragedy.
So yeah, I've got a follow-up question then. It has to do with this debris and stuff that's floating around Earth. How do they clean that up? Is there some kind of special program or technology, or is there something that maybe you know that they're working on?
So the first goal is to eliminate the production of new space debris from future missions. In the past, the amount of junk that space missions left behind in orbit wasn't really considered. Now, nets and robots are being developed which could be launched into orbit, and they could target and capture the debris that's there and then send them on a path which could allow them to burn up in the atmosphere. Progress is being made in this area. The European Space Agency has a plan involving removal via a robotic arm that they would launch, and that's scheduled for 2025.
So on the topic of new inventions, such as that robot arm, basically, how have recent technological advances changed the way astronauts observe and study the universe? Like, are there any new tools, technologies, or gadgets that are introduced? Or
the James Webb telescope is one amazing new tool. Back in 1993, the Hubble Space Telescope began functioning properly. And it gave us amazing new views of the universe and allowed us to see things we had never seen before. But technology has progressed so much since 1993 that finally in 2022, the James Webb gave us new views of familiar objects in the universe, as well as allowing us to see things we had never seen before. Earlier, I mentioned the image of galaxies where we did not expect them to be found. That was the first image released to the public from the James Webb telescope. It uses infrared wavelengths of light that are especially good at seeing through clouds of dust. And so we've been able to see stars forming in a way that hasn't been possible before. Also, the resolution of this telescope is so good, we've been able to get a direct image of an exoplanet. That is a planet that's orbiting a star outside of our solar system. And this is just the beginning. Hopefully, we'll be able to analyze data it's sending back to us for many years to come.
The James Webb Telescope. Where is that located at?
In orbit around Earth.
In orbit? Okay. All right. So we'd like to end our guest interview by asking them some advice. So if you don't mind, Mr. Darrow, we'd like to ask you some of your advice So our final question is, what advice would you give someone who is not necessarily an astronomer, but likes to look up at the night sky and ponder?
First, I would encourage them to look up at the night sky wherever they are. Bangkok is not an ideal place for seeing countless stars, but there are still wonderful things to see here. Many times, Mr. Chris or Mr. Jeremy or some other teacher will come up and excitedly ask me, "Did you see Jupiter yesterday? Or did you see Venus this morning?" Wonder can be found wherever you are. Bangkok's sky can be like a beginner's version of the night sky. If you learn the stars and planets that you can see in Bangkok's sky, they can serve as markers for you to find your way around when you get to a place with nice dark skies. I don't know if this is advice exactly, but one thing that I note, when people look at the vastness of space and ponder the universe, I see two common reactions. Carl Sagan gives one possible reaction in a quote that he said, "We find that we live on an insignificant planet of a humdrum star lost between two spiral arms in the outskirts of a galaxy, which is a member of a sparse cluster of galaxies tucked away in some forgotten corner of a universe in which there are far more galaxies than people." You can compare that to the reaction of King David talking to God when he writes in Psalm 8, "When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is mankind that you are mindful of them, human beings that you care for them?" This starts off sounding similar to Carl Sagan's quote a moment ago, but King David goes on to say, "You have made them a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honor. You made them rulers over the works of your hands. You put everything under their feet." I would encourage anyone to likewise ponder the amazing universe we can observe and our place in it.
All right, thank you. As we end this segment, we'd like for you to read our top 10 list titled "The Top 10 Facts About Space You Probably Don't Know." Mr. Darrow, go ahead and start with number 10.
Number 10. In space, no one can hear you scream, literally. Sound waves need a medium to travel through, and since space is a vacuum, it's the quietest place you'll never hear. Number 9. Our Milky Way galaxy is spinning at about 225 kilometers per second. So even if you're sitting still here on Earth, just know that you're hurtling through space at breakneck speeds. Next is number 8. A day on Venus, the time it takes to complete one rotation, is longer than a year on Venus, the time it takes to orbit the sun. Try to wrap your mind around that. Number 7 is, if you're worried about your weight, just move to Mars. You'll weigh about 38% less there. So if you weigh 170 pounds on Earth, you'll weigh 106 pounds on Mars. Number 6, in 2008, an astronaut lost a tool bag in space during a spacewalk. So, a bag full of space tools is now orbiting Earth. Number 5. It rains diamonds on two ice giants in our solar system, Neptune and Uranus. Number 4. Mercury, a planet about the size of Earth's moon, has the most extreme temperature fluctuations in the solar system, ranging from blistering hot to freezing cold. It's also the closest planet to the sun. Next is number 3. The Hercules Corona Borealis Great Wall is the largest structure in the universe, stretching over 10 billion light years. And number 2. When a star dies, it can go out in a spectacular explosion known as a supernova, outshining entire galaxies for a brief period. And the number 1 fact about space you probably don't know, Voyager 1, launched in 1977, is the most distant human-made object in space. It's currently over 15 billion miles away from Earth and is still cruising through interstellar space without any intention of returning home.
And that ends segment one of this episode. Stick around as we continue with part four of our story. We'll be right back after this short PSA.
One, two, three, four.
Hey everyone, Mr. Jason here again. Go check out the Students Incorporated website at studentsincorporated.com. It's an easy domain name to remember. In a previous career of mine, I worked as a website designer and developer and have always been fascinated in this digital medium. Also, my marketing students are learning the importance of utilizing content you already have to serve other purposes and to serve other mediums. Over the course of almost two full seasons, we've produced a lot of valuable content, which we can now start sharing on our website in the form of audio, video, and blog post. Here's a few technical details about the website build for all you techies out there. The yearly cost of having this website up and live is around $15. That's right, only $15. The website is hosted using Google Cloud Storage Services, which supports websites built with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript only. The website utilizes Cloudflare's free Universal SSL Certificate service to provide secure and encrypted traffic flow to and from the website for our users. And all audio and video files on the website use HTML's iframe element to pull that respected content into the website from their respective platforms. There are other fun details, but I don't want to bore you anymore. Anyway, check out our website, read a few blog posts, and get caught up on any of our released episodes. Oh yeah, and if you're interested in sponsorship, you can find our forums online now as well. Visit studentsincorporated.com. Now back to the episode. We are back for our second segment, where we continue with part four of our story, The Secrets of El Dorado. Part four is titled Histories and Legends. If you missed parts one through three, make sure you get caught up before jumping in mid-story. Episode 55 includes part one, The Disappearance. Episode 56 includes part two, Uncovering Secrets, and episode 57 includes part 3, The Map. Before we begin part 4, Histories and Legends, Rebecca will give us a quick recap from our last episode.
In part 3 of the story, we find Sierra, Ava, and Lily back in the cafe. Sierra is working behind the counter when Ethan asks for his tracking device back, which looks like a paperclip. Meanwhile, Professor Hawthorne joins Ava and Lily at the counter in the cafe, accidentally dropping an old manuscript and the note from Chin. Ava helps pick up the papers and notices strange Chinese characters on them. Professor Hawthorne introduces this mysterious note left by Chin, accompanied by an old manuscript. The note contains Chinese characters and a cryptic formula, intriguing Lily and prompting Ava to seek help from her colleague. Meanwhile, Professor Hawthorne discovers similar characters in the manuscript, sparking curiosity among the group. As they delve into decoding the characters, they uncover coordinates leading to two different locations. Ethan's research reveals the significance of these coordinates, suggesting a potential secret message. The team speculates on Chen's intentions and the connection between the note, manuscript, and historical context. Professor Hawthorne attempts to contact Chen, while Ava cautiously considers the potential implications for her journalistic career. Sierra ponders the use of coded messages in conveying what seemed to be important information. The group's collaborative efforts set the stage for a deeper investigation into the unfolding mystery.
Thank you, Rebecca, and without further ado, let's get back to our story where we join Ava, Lily, Sierra, Ethan, and the professor in part 4, Histories and Legends. It was late afternoon when the gang began making more progress on the situation. Now they're armed with a historical manuscript, Chen's note, and two different coordinates directing them to two different locations, kind of like a map. Professor Hawthorne examines the coordinates on the manuscript again, N38, 55, 28, and W120, 24, 12. He reads out loud, and that's Rob's Peak, a little bit north of the Union Valley Reservoir.
What about it, Professor? Lady asks.
I know that area well. I've been there several times on past projects. It's a fascinating place, Professor Hawthorne recounts as he looks through the cafe windows. You know what? He says, I'm going to take the day off tomorrow and go there to see what's up.
Ethan looks up from his laptop. That sounds like fun, Professor. Actually, now that I'm thinking, Rob's Peak is a decently high mountain, right? I'm working on another small piece of tech. It's sort of like a mini drone, and I've been wanting to test it at a higher altitude. It looks like Robb's Peak would be a great place to try it out.
Okay, that sounds cool. Why haven't we talked about this stuff before, Ethan? I had no idea you were such a tech and gadget guy. You should come with me then, and I could use the company. Professor Hawthorne smiles. I'll show you around the mountain.
Perfect. Let's see, tomorrow. Yep, I can take the day off as well. You can work both the afternoon and evening shifts, right, Sierra? You already are working a double shift today, though. Ethan turns in Sierra's direction. Are you up for that tomorrow? You'll be doing me a big favor.
Sierra smiles a little. Sure, Ethan, I got you.
Thank you, Sierra, Ethan says. The cafe's in good hands.
Professor Hawthorne finishes the last bite of his sandwich before asking, Lily and Ava, do you want to come with the guys tomorrow?
Hiking is not really my thing to do. I do want to help out, though. Let me think. Oh, Lily exclaims, her brown eyes growing white. We have Chen's note, right? And he has some of the symbols and formula written out. I've got an idea. I could spend some time in the college science lab tomorrow and see what I can find out about the formula on that note. She snaps a quick photo of the note with her phone.
That's perfect. I bet we'll get to the bottom of all of this soon, Ava smiles, though part of her wishes it wouldn't end just yet. After all, the bigger the story, the better her piece for the bee will be.
Sierra tilts her head before voicing aloud a thought that just crossed her mind. Lily, you have access to the lab and all that, right?
I do, Lily chirps. I have my student ID. This gives me access to the science labs we visited earlier.
Awesome. Concrete evidence from research is always a plus. Ava takes a quick look at her work calendar before replying to Professor Hawthorne's question, saying, I don't think I'll be able to go either. I do love the outdoors, and especially the idea of an adventure. But I've really got to make some progress on the piece I have to write for the bee. Deadline's coming up soon, unfortunately. Professor and Ethan, you two have fun.
All right, it's settled then, Professor Hawthorne says. Ethan, you take all your tech equipment you want to test out, and I'll take the manuscript, the note, and my notebook to see if there's something else I may have missed.
Ava frowns a little, glancing at the manuscript on the table before asking Professor Hawthorne. You know the way there, though, right, Professor?
Yep, I'm going to take the manuscript with me just in case. There may be other clues I'm missing now that it seems things are connected in some way. Plus, I'm finding I forget things easily these days. Professor Hawthorne chuckles a little bit.
Meanwhile, Lily takes a quick glance at her watch, her heartbeat racing as she says, Oh no, I almost forgot. I have an interview for a summer internship. It starts at 20 minutes. I better go. She looks around frantically for her backpack and sees it against the chair that Ethan is sitting on. Ethan, could you pass me my bag? She asks, checking her watch a second time.
Sure, Ethan says. As Ethan picks up the backpack and passes it to Lily, he drops in one of the small tracking devices, the thing that looks like a paperclip, into one of the small side pockets of her backpack. He thinks to himself, I need to test these things some more since I'd like to get more than a few hours of data. Plus, I need to know how long the batteries last. However, for some reason, he doesn't tell Lily. He figures she'll just retrieve the device sometime in the next few days when she comes back to the cafe.
Thank you. Keep me updated with what you find out, Lily says, her words carrying out the door before the gang gets to wish her luck on her interview and the research at the college tomorrow.
All right, Professor Hawthorne turns to the rest of the group. I better get going as well. I've got some more work to finish at the college, and my wife and I have dinner plans with some old friends who are in town this week. Ethan, I'll see you at 8 in the morning. How about we meet here at the cafe?
Sounds good, Professor, Ethan replies.
Great. Have a great evening, and thanks for the sandwich again, Ethan. Great as always. Professor smiles as he gathers his briefcase, the manuscript, and the note before leaving the cafe.
Ava also has plans to grab dinner with her grandmother, so she bids goodbye to Sierra and Ethan before driving away from Ethan's cafe.
Punctual and on time the next morning, Ethan is standing outside the front of his already busy cafe with a small backpack containing some tech gear, a bottle of water, and some sunscreen. He's dressed for a day in the hot sun as he waits for Professor Hawthorne to arrive.
As Prof. Hawthorne pulls up to the cafe in his old Ford Bronco, he yells out the window, Hey Ethan, good morning, and hop in. Professor Hawthorne smiles as Ethan gets into the Bronco and gets situated in the front passenger seat. Are we ready to get rolling? Professor Hawthorne says.
Sure am. Let's go, Eden says before a thought pops into his mind. Hey, Professor, you know a lot about the history here, right? Are there any cool stories you could share along the way?
The professor thought about plugging one of his books and almost said, yeah, I do know a lot of history about that place. You could too if you would have read one of my books. But he didn't say that. He didn't want Ethan to think he was being sarcastic, and he didn't want to sound like a jerk. So instead, Professor Hawthorne said, yes, there is a lot of history around that area and the reservoir as well. Professor Hawthorne continues as they travel out of town toward the mountains. You see, Rob's Peak especially was the site of several popular mines back during the Gold Rush days. Legend has it that much of the gold that was found in the small streams and creeks around Rob's Peak actually originated from the mountain. There's evidence that suggests the gold, especially the small pieces and small flakes, would get deposited in the small waterways during the spring snowmelt from the mountain. So many of the people who came here looking for gold only looked in the streams and creeks around that area. Very few prospectors went up on the mountain looking for gold, and fewer yet dug the small mines that are still on the mountain to this day. Most of the people back then wanted to get rich quick. Plus, they didn't have the right tools, equipment, money, or the time to dig a proper mine into the mountain. Except for a couple families from Virginia who traveled all the way out here together in the spring of 1849. You see, this is why we called the people who came to this area during that year the 49ers. They came by ship, on horseback, and by covered wagons from all over. Gold prospectors came from North America, Latin America, Asia, Europe, and Australia. It's estimated that this area saw an increase in population of more than 300,000 people in just 1 year. A year later, in 1850, California entered the Union, joining the United States, establishing itself with a state constitution and government.
I guess I should have been paying more attention in history class. I don't remember learning any of this. So what happened to the family from Virginia that you mentioned?
Well, it's a miracle they made it. I'm not sure how they did it, since everything west of what we now call the Missouri River was, at that time, unorganized and ungoverned territory. It was literally the Wild West. It was rugged and dangerous. These families had to navigate their way around and through mountain ranges, through plateau grasslands, make numerous river crossings, put up with unpredictable weather patterns, all the while crossing through hostile and non-hostile Native American tribal lands. And in the spring of 1849, they settled down at the base of Rob's Peak with the main goal of digging several mining shafts into the mountain. The other interesting fact I forgot to mention in the cafe was that many of the prospectors were recent immigrants to the United States, and that these immigrants were not treated very well by the non-immigrant population. And some of these immigrants were Chinese. In fact, this manuscript I have documents some of the activities that went on in some of the mining camps and settlements. Since the information that was written in the manuscript could not be verified by anybody else besides the author, it was deemed not credible and was never officially published.
Oh, wow. I guess I should read some of your history books. So the mines that are on the mountains were dug by the families from Virginia?
Yes, Rob's Peak is named after one of the families, Charles Robb. I can't find a lot of information about them, but I do know they were from Virginia. There was a lot of happening in the southern states at that time in history, and it wasn't all good. Slavery was rampant, and there was talk of some of the states breaking off from the Union. Virginia eventually did in 1861. It seceded from the United States and joined the Confederacy, and Richmond became the capital of the Confederacy. This is the same year the Civil War broke out. A very dark time in the history of the United States of America, to say the least.
Wow, thanks for the history lesson, Professor. I feel I've a better understanding about where we are going today and the history of the place.
By this time, Professor Hawthorne and Ethan were almost 45 minutes into their one-hour drive from Coloma to Rob's Peak. You see, there were two main routes to the top of Rob's Peak. One went south and one went north. The northern route was about 20 minutes faster, which the professor opted to take.
Ethan glanced at the GPS and noticed that they would be arriving at the destination around 9:15 a.m.
Meanwhile, moving away from the boys and their little adventure for a bit, Lily arrives at the college around 9 o'clock. Her interview had gone well yesterday, but she was unsure if it was good enough to land her an internship. I'll find out soon enough, she thought to herself. At the college, she sees a few friends who stayed back for the summer to do more independent research, so she waves hi to them. Then she makes her way over to the science building, heads down in the basement labs, and uses her ID to swipe in. As she sets her backpack against the lab desk, she's thinking about how she can test out Chen's formula. She opens her phone to look at the formula and turns on some music and starts getting to work. It's not until around noon before she takes a quick lunch break at one of the cafes on campus. Half wishing Ethan's cafe was just a little bit closer. The distance versus her hunger versus her motivation to face that hot sun, she thinks, shaking her head a little, maybe next time. After a quick lunch at the campus cafe, she returns to the lab only to find Professor Sharpton standing at the door. She seems to be deep in thought. Oh, hey, Professor Sharpton, Lily says, smiling at the professor. The professor takes a step back, not having expected company. Professor Sharpton returns her greetings as he smiles at Lily, curiously asking what she's working on over the summer break. Lily is delighted at Professor Sharpton's interest, and she invites him inside to show him what she's been working on. Lily thinks to herself, maybe Professor Sharpton could help her out since the formula Chen wrote on a note to Professor Hawthorne calls for some element that the lab seems not to have in inventory. Some substance or mineral Lily did not recognize.
Meanwhile, Ava is working on her piece for the bee at her grandma's mother's house, getting a little frustrated because the words that naturally spilled from her fingers seem to be stuck today. Pursing her lips, she decides to take her laptop to Ethan's cafe to work instead. It'll be nice to see Sierra again, and the change of scenery usually does the trick.
Sierra feels a smile grow on her face when she sees Ava walk into the doors of Ethan's cafe. She says a quick hello to her before taking another customer's order. The cafe is busy as usual, since it's only the third day of the town's annual Gold Rush Festival. However, the lunch rush hour was ending and most of the customers were getting done and leaving.
Ava is at her usual table by the front window, setting up her laptop as she waits for Sierra or another server to take her order. Being in the cafe again makes her think back to yesterday's events. It was a pretty exciting afternoon. Then she wonders about what Ethan and Professor Hawthorne are up to.
By this time, the professor and Ethan had been at Rob's Peak for almost 3 hours now. Rob's Peak isn't like it used to be back in the old days, rugged, remote, and dangerous. It's now quite developed with roads leading directly up to the peak of the mountain, one from the south and one from the north. At the top of the mountain, there's a small gravel parking lot flanked by a wooded picnic area and a small canteen. The canteen is more like a small general store with snack-type foods and drinks. And when the kitchen's open, they make a mean grilled hamburger with a side of potato wedges. The canteen offers hikers, campers, backpackers, and day trippers a nice place to rest and grab some food. For about the first hour when they arrived, the professor studied the manuscript and some old typographical maps while talking with the owners of the canteen. Ethan stayed outside in the parking area where he assembled and practiced flying the mini drone he had built and brought along. He was also excited to discover that the drone worked just fine in the higher altitude. They spent the second hour hiking down to the first gold mine site on the north side of the mountain. This mine site was the most popular with the tourists as it was easily accessible and the entrance of the mine was not sealed shut. This meant that if you were brave enough, you could walk about 100 or so yards into the mine before being met by a vertical shaft that went straight down into what looked like a black hole into the mountain. The vertical shaft was closed, though, with bars and padlocks. This part of the mine had been closed to the public for years since it was a hazard to curious tourists and novice explorers. The professor turned on his flashlight and walked into the mine all the way to where the shaft was located. Meanwhile, Ethan stayed outside the entrance and flew his drone around the area, taking aerial video and photos of the surrounding.
Ethan was thrilled that his new device was working like a charm. He wanted to give it one more test before bringing it back down and turning it off. He He decided to test his flying skills by maneuvering the drone via his phone app into the mine and all the way back to the area that the professor had walked to. He also wanted to test the night vision ability of the camera that he had installed. The drone hummed down the narrow, horizontal mine shaft towards the professor. Sure enough, Ethan could see the professor standing by the locked up vertical shaft gate in camera view. Ethan watched on his phone in camera view as the professor turned around and waved at the drone and gestured that he was going to be walking back out. Ethan then maneuvered the drone to turn 180 degrees and fly back out of the mine shaft while the professor followed. As Professor Hawthorne exited the mine, Ethan said, hey professor, you're going to want to see this, as he pointed to his tablet which had the footage his drone had captured while inside the mine shaft.
Meanwhile, and back in Coloma at Ethan's cafe, Sierra notices Ava has come back to the cafe for a light lunch. Hey Ava, didn't know you were coming in today. Sierra stops by Ava's table. Happy to see you though. You want your usual?
Yep, thank you, girly, Ava smiles.
Of course, of course. All right, Sierra remembers. And how's that piece for the bee going?
Ugh, Ava says, it's not where I want it to be. I'm having writer's block today. It's really frustrating.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear. Hope that goes away soon. Maybe the sandwich might help? Sierra looks at Ava.
I hope so too, Ava tells Sierra before she goes to put in Ava's order. After Sierra leaves, Ava thinks about the reason she hasn't been working as much this morning. She stumbles upon a thought and suddenly she knows why. She's got a theory, to say the least, and she waits eagerly for Sierra's shift to end. She tells Sierra this as Sierra brings Ava her sandwich.
All right, girl, Sierra says, I'm done with my shift. Spill, what's up?
Okay, Ava says, putting her journalism hat on. I think the professor is sketchy.
Sierra's eyes widen. You mean Professor Hawthorne?
Yeah, Ava says.
Wait, why though? He's helping us out.
I know, but think about it. Yesterday when I asked him about needing the map, he was almost defensive about it, remember? Why would he need the manuscript with him? Wouldn't that get all dirtied on the hike? He could have just taken a photo. Ava looks at Sierra, eyebrows raised.
Maybe you have a point, Sierra reflects.
Right, Ava nods. And also, if he had knocked his briefcase yesterday, would he even be showing us the manuscript that matched Chen's note? Why was he even carrying Chen's note? Why did he even have the manuscript in the first place? Why were they in his briefcase and what was he going to do with them? And think about it, he's also pretty close to Chen, right? So what if
he has something to do with Chen's disappearance? No way, Sierra explains upon realization.
Yeah, no way, Ava echoes.
What are we going to do? Who are we going to tell?
No, Ava rushes. Girl, we can't tell anyone. If we tell anyone, that could tip off Professor Hawthorne and we'll lose the manuscript. Besides, it's just a theory.
Oh no, you're right. Sierra looks at Ava. What do we do then?
Ava thinks for a bit, lips pursed, before she shakes Sierra's hand. Oh, I know, she says. Are you free tonight?
Yeah, I think so. Why? Sierra asks.
Remember how there were two coordinates that go to two locations? I say we go explore the other location tonight and see what we find out. Luckily, I took a photo of Chen's note the other day. I knew it would come in handy.
Sierra thinks about it for a bit and agrees. And, not telling anyone right, she double checks.
You got it, not a soul, Ava says, tracing two fingers from one corner of her mouth to the other, zipping her lips, making a motion of throwing the key away.
Sierra's eyes immediately brightened. This was their secret code back in high school. She laughs a little before following suit.
All right, I'll see you then, Ava says. 7 p.m., your place?
Sierra nods. I'll see you then.
Ava smiles as through shooting down her spine. She's always loved mysteries and adventures, especially nighttime adventures. One way or another, she's going to get to the bottom of this.
Meanwhile, back in the lab at the college, Lee's been working on trying to figure out the formula that Chen had written down on the note he had given to Professor Hawthorne the week before. Professor Sharpton was in the lab, along with several other students working on their own projects. Lee was waiting for Professor Sharpton to be free as she really needed some help with one part of the formula she didn't understand. However, Professor Sharpton had been in the back office talking on the phone for over 20 minutes. Professor Sharpton walks out of the back office and straight over to Lily and asks,
"Okay, Lily, let me see what you're working on. Maybe I can help." After Professor Sharpton says this, he looks up at the door to the lab and nods his head toward the person standing outside the lab.
And that ends part 4, Histories and Legends. Thank you for listening. Tune in next episode as we continue with part 5, titled The Secret Society. As we end this episode, we want to give a big thanks to our resident astronomer here at ICS. Thanks again, Mr. Darrell, for helping us see and have a better understanding about the universe and space and where we fit in the cosmos. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.